and so I will call this meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
John Devaney?
Here.
Stephen Jones?
Here.
Jose Trevino?
Here.
Amanda McKinney?
Present.
Janice DeCio? We have a quorum.
Thank you. Just to review the agenda of this special meeting of the Yakima Regional Cleanup Agency Board of Directors, the purpose of this meeting is for the interview of finalist candidates for the position of Air Pollution Control Officer and Executive Director. I will be hearing from two candidates today who will also be taking questions from the public. Following the interaction with the candidates, the board will move into discussion of or hearing comments, rather, from the public about those candidates. Then the board will discuss their impressions of the candidates and will decide on next steps in our process. We may hear more members of the public entering. We'll try not to let that disturb our candidates. Were there any questions about the agenda for today?
None for me, sir.
All right, hearing none. The questioning and mediation with the candidates will be run by our Yakima County Human Resources staff, who've been doing an outstanding job helping us through this process. Jackie, do you want to describe this presentation process to the board and the members of the public present?
Sure. Good afternoon, everyone. Jackie Lindsay from Yakima County Human Resources Department. The process has been that we have a two-step interview process. So from posting of the job announcement, my office and the Yakima County Human Resources screen all of the applicants, forward it on to the board, the applicants that have met the minimum qualifications. From there, an additional screening took place where we decided on which ones we would actually call to a first interview. We had that first interview sometime last month. Forgive me, I don't have the exact date. But we had the first interview sometime last month. There were four applicants in that process. And then from that list of four applicants, we've now zoned down to two applicants, which we've invited for today's session, which is a second interview where they're making a presentation as well as having the ability to be seen or questioned by the public. So that's where we are at today. Are there any questions? Yes, sir.
It's a question I actually asked to two of the county commissioners and never got an answer. Was there any time during this process where the agricultural industry was allowed to review the applicants and make comments on them?
To my knowledge, I can only tell you when I forwarded the applications, it went to the board for its review.
So I would have to ask the board that.
Okay. Just to respond to the member of the public's question, the candidates themselves were not identified to the public prior to today. This is the first time other groups outside the members of the board of directors and the staff of Yakima County Human Resources will get a chance to review and assess the candidates.
May I add?
Yes.
Simply that I did receive your inquiry.
Can I just say, I have a problem with my hearing. Can people speak closer to the mics or turn the volume up?
I would like to acknowledge that I received your request to my commissioner's email, to which I forwarded to Mr. Devaney in the form of receiving it for the Clean Air Board. So it was more appropriately addressed to the chair of this board rather than the position as commissioner.
And I did not receive an answer.
All right. Are there no other process questions?
So I'd like to introduce our first applicant this afternoon. Adam Yost, I hope I pronounced
Yost.
Adam will be presenting to us. Roughly 20 minutes or so is the presentation to the audience here today.
Is my voice more than sufficient? Thank you, okay. So as she said, my name is Adam Yost. I'm a lifelong resident of Yakima County. We moved here in 1988 after my father got out of the United States Army. I myself am a member of the United States military. I'm a National Guard Sergeant Major. Been in 19 years, 355 days, but who's counting? Additionally, I graduated high school at Davis High School in Yakima, Central Washington University in 2012 with a degree in political science. And then I went down to California, to the University of Southern California for my master's degree in public administration. I've been a lifelong public administrator, be it the military enterprise or not, albeit a year and a half blip in the private sector as a controller, assistant controller, sorry, for Mount Adams Fruit here in Yakima, Washington. The presentation that I was asked to give to the public and the board today is on how do we work as a agency with public comment, public complaint, how do we work with other governments inside of Yakima County, and how do we become a value-added team member to business in general. So this is our agenda here today. We're going to have a brief discussion of the public records request requirements. I'm not going to try to get too wonky or policy-like for you all, just a very short snippet on that. And then the process of responding to public inquiry, building a coalition of compliance in Yakima County, and then agency support to the business community, and we'll wrap it all up with a brief conclusion at the end. Next slide, please. So public inquiry and disclosure requests. I'm a big believer in that you gotta define the why as a public administrator. Why do we do this? Why does it matter? Because that gets after very much the what and the how. So why does it matter? Because at the end of the day, we utilize the trust and the funds of the public to enact certain policy prescriptions for certain things that the public cares about, i.e. clean air. So why do we need to respond to public inquiry and disclosure? To build that organizational trust with our constituency, which is the public of Yakima County, to ensure that we're doing our due diligence to act as those agents to keep the air clean and ensure compliance based upon different federal, state, and local regulation. Now, a culture of transparency and openness is the greatest way for a public agency to grow that organizational trust with their constituents inside of any municipal government, county government, state, or federal. Additionally, timely and accurate reporting back to our constituency, the people of Yakima County, further builds that organizational trust with us, and it's a fundamental aspect of public trust as a governmental body. Not only responding in a timely manner that most people see as sufficient, but making sure that we're responding directly to their concern and not giving a overbroad or generalized answer. And then finally, if you look in Chapter 44-14 of the Washington Administrative Code, or the WAC, you'll see that from my very cursory review of the policies and procedures and means for the public to inquire into direct requests for public disclosure or any other complaint or comment, YRCAA is meeting the provisions under 44-14 for at least openness, i.e. availability of their office personnel during business hours, as well as a very specific way to get after requests, and whether it be actually filling out the form at the office or online. Next slide, please. Next slide, sorry. So building a coalition of compliance in the county. So under the revised Code of Washington and the Washington Administrative Code, the legislature of Washington decided to abandon the old architecture that we had for how we did compliance for clean air agencies and nominated one agency per county, for us it's the Yakima Regional Clean Air Agency, as the body of choice to vet all policies, procedures, rules making, and other aspects that deal with clean air. So it is our requirement, in my mind, to ensure that we're interjecting ourselves in a way that is not just a matter of more or less playing referee, but is a matter of being a member of the staff of the entire county and all the governments. How do we get after that? A way, now this is from my own personal experience, being from the military enterprise, we use a lot of memorandums of understanding and agreement. We lay out in formalized literature, this is how we're going to work together. These are the expectations of you. These are the expectations on me. And we define specifically that that's how we're going to get after the problem of being staffed together. You know, we see a lot of this specifically in what we call the joint enterprise in the military, when the Air Force, the Army, and the Marine Corps are working together. None of us talk the same. We use completely different measurement techniques. Some use meters, some use feet above sea level, so on and so forth. So we have to come to a standardization of language and process to get after the problem of how we're going to do different things together. Same thing should happen in the county. There should be a defined procedure of when whenever there's anything that's being staffed, either at the municipal level or other government, that we have an ability as the YRCAA to pull in that rulemaking or that policy and review it. And this gets after two things. A, it allows for us to request change before it gets enacted. Therefore, we don't have any effects that happen intermittently before we actually get a chance to strike the rule or change it. Additionally, it gets after the best thing in my mind. We're not doing double work, therefore we're not paying for the same product twice. That's the worst thing a government can do in my mind, is that you do the same work twice, now I'm paying for the same, for double hours when I should have paid for it the first time. And that saves more money to the taxpayer, that allows us to get after more things as far as those funds can now be used for other projects, other programming. Additionally, a way to get after this is to ensure that whether it be the executive director position or some other member of the YRCAA staff, that there is a representative at the Conference of Governments meetings quarterly, just as a touch point. You know, all too often on staff, somebody will have a good idea, but it gets lost because we didn't have that actual physical touch point. We learned a lot of this during COVID. You know, it was great to have these synchronous meetings where we were actually together on teams, but because you didn't have that little after chatter or before chatter, the business of the day didn't really get done because people weren't able to have their sidebars that they're used to actually attack certain distinct problems. Everybody's just giving their report and moving on with the day. So having that person there, not as an actual member of the board or by any means, but just present for the meeting, will allow for that side discussion. Next slide, please. All right, so, one more. Thank you. So the final prong of the three-prong question, support to the business community. This is a big one for us. So first and foremost, one of the great efforts that the YRCAA gets after is conducting research into relative problems with our industries in the community that pollute the air. You have Dr. Tahat, and there are with other personnel that were research leads on the article, and their best practices research into dairy operations and how do we bring those practices that have been learned outside of our community, glean that information off of those best practices, those other industry partners, and transport them back to Yakima and use them here to decrease the potential pollutants that we may get from those operations. As well as you have, butcher the name, but Dr. Meitelonner, and the 2050 Challenge, specifically talking about how do we get after what is believed to be the problem of increased utilization of our land for farming without losing our planet. So there's a really good, healthy discussion. Now, whether or not you believe with the doctor's findings, at the end of the day, just bringing that information to the public, bringing that information to our community and to our businesses to look at the problem from a different way and just kind of offer a difference of opinions. You know, Thomas Jefferson said it best, democracy is a collision of ideas with the best coming to the top, and you have to have that collision of ideas to figure out the best way to attack these problems for our constituency. And then the final one, the Yakima Wintertime Nitrate Study, or YAWNS, which it will give you that when you read it. It was more science than I think I've done since undergraduate studies, but it's a very great segue into the next discussion, actually. So in the YAWNS study, it talks about this unique phenomenon of the city of Yakima and the greater Yakima County, where because of our historical agricultural construct and the soil content of nitrate and everything else, as well as just the way that moisture, atmospheric pressure, all this other stuff works together in the winter, we are like at the precipice of always triggering that high or that very dangerous particulate matter, 2.5, which is really, really scary. Anything lower than that, we start getting into really big concerns of just not just sensitive populations, but all populations having lung problems. We're always there. Like, doesn't matter what we do, we're always there. So a way that we've looked at trying to get rid of some of that problem is through grants and cooperative grants. Most specifically, our grant that we utilize for getting rid of wood-burning stoves and other types of heating techniques that people use in their homes to cleaner, more efficient methods of heating their homes. You know, At the end of the day, a person's home is their castle, and then how they take care of their family, heat it, cold it, whatever, that's how they're doing the best that they can. One of the ways that we can enable our citizenry to have a better quality of life is through finding a way to take off the burden of upgrading that wood-burning stove, therefore allowing them to still heat their family efficiently, but decreasing our problem that we have in wintertime with that nitrate study. So to me, that's an absolute great way that we can get after supporting the business community and the public at the same time, because it's not just individual taxpayers. There's businesses that have legacy systems, oil burners, you name it, that if we can find ways to get after different types of tax system, tax structures, tax systems, tax breaks, other grants from the federal government, whether it be the EPA, name an agency, we may be able to further decrease that overall nitrate saturation that we have there in the winter and realize marketable gains to our business. And that goes right back into the final point there, making a deliberate effort that to assure the business community that we're a value-added partner. We are not somebody that is going to be here, again, as I said in earlier comments, the referee on the field. We're not another adversary that you need to combat. But the YRCAA should be an organization of experts that know how to get after the problem of maintaining clean, healthy air, and we should be a part of a lot of the decision-making going on with businesses at the beginning of any of their procedure, whether it be construction, remodeling, new procedures that they might be doing in the fields for different types of agricultural farming that, predominantly tree fruit. Down in the Lower Valley, we see a lot more row and circle crop. But no matter what we're doing, we should be a partner in that and part of that discussion so that we can give information and tutelage to business of where the traps are that they're going to run afoul of maybe NEPA or some of the other regulatory requirements of the federal government and the state government as well as our county. By being that value-added member during that initial phase, it'll just pay dividends for a business community. Next slide, please. No? Too far. Sorry. All right, in conclusion, just to take us back through all of our points, so timely and accurate reporting and disclosure of information that we have in our possession at YRCAA to just enhance transparency and make our public believe that we're being as upfront and honest. Honesty is key. We have a special position of trust and authority inside of the public. Members of the agency are unelected, so unless they are actually fired by the board or some type of administrative member of the staff, they're there in perpetuity, correct? So it's imperative that those unelected officials are being watched by the public and open to that dialogue with the public. Providing a forum for the public and other conservation partners to approach. We have the quarterly meetings that are put on by the YRCAA, and that's a great forum. But also ad hoc communication is imperative as well. Like, we can't always have that one touch point with the public every 3 months, I've been in the National Guard for 20 years. We drill 1 week in a month, 2 weeks in the summer. And I tell my junior leaders below me, soldiers' problems don't happen 1 week in a month. They happen 365 days a year. It's the same thing as an agency. The public's problems don't only happen once a quarter. They happen every day. They need information every day. So making sure that there's that synchronicity between ourselves as an office and the public to get timely and accurate comment back. And then ensuring that we're included in the rules-making process with other government agencies and other governments inside of the county is imperative. And finally, support to the local business community, designing ways, policies and procedures that we can get after being a part of their conceptual design before they enact something so that we can therefore prevent any possible running afoul of any of the rules making that have been in place. Next slide. I thank you very much for your time. Again, my name is Adam, and I'm more than open to any questions at the pleasure of the board.
Thank you. I know we'll have several questions from the board as well as members of the public. Just so that we can allocate time, if members of the public are interested in asking a question, I ask that you move towards the microphone, which is placed at the front of the room so that we can both capture your comments and identify you as wanting to ask a question. while people think about what questions they may want to ask, I'll exercise the chair's privilege and ask the first one. I appreciated your comments, Adam, about cooperation towards achieving clean air goals, not a referee, though, you said. I would like to ask you how you balance building cooperative relationships where we do have regulatory authority. Mm-hmm. There's certain things that we must enforce, and there's certain things that are outside of our jurisdiction. How do you foster relationships in an environment where there's certain limitations on your authority and responsibilities as a government official that you have?
So, first off, I'd like to point out that I said not just a referee. So we still are a referee. At the end of the day, under the revised code of Washington and the Washington Administrative Code, the Clean Air Agency in each county is the paramount authority for clean air and following certain provisions by federal and state law as to make sure that we are making our partners inside of the county compliant. As a public administrator, more often than not, especially as an executive director or any other person below, it's not your decision making. You're not the decision maker. The board for the Clean Air Agency is the decision maker. If there is an issue with compliance, it should be referred to the board unless there's otherwise defined policy procedure by name a codified regulation or name a Washington Administrative Code. Some of the different issue areas with compliance do have specified tables of penalties that will be processed, and we just go through that process. But if it's a matter of a decision needing to be made, that's what this board is here for, and it is our job in the agency to define the problem, create a problem set for you, and a decision brief so that the decision can be made.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Yes, sir.
Any questions?
None for me. I'm interested in the public questions.
Okay. Any public questions? I'm looking to see if anyone's moving towards the microphone.
These questions don't take the place of our 3-minute statement.
No. You will have a chance to offer your comments after both candidates have been heard from on your views on those candidates. This is your chance to ask the candidates questions. We do just ask that you go to that microphone here in the front, the electronic microphone, so that your question goes into the record. Yeah. And please do identify yourself.
Sure. My name is Dean Effler. I live in West Valley. You mentioned the ON study, and you mentioned nitrates, but the main contributor to the elevated PM2.5 in the wintertime was ammonium nitrate. You didn't mention where the ammonia was coming from.
Yes, sir. As stated before, the science of that is a little bit beyond my scope. That's why we have such wonderful professionals like Dr. Tahat that would be advising the board specifically. But at the end of the day, the key piece of that, the takeaway for me, is simply that because of some of the pollutants that we do have, finding other policies and procedures, or finding mechanisms or funding streams that can get after combating issues, as opposed to just trying to stop what's going on. Sometimes you have to find the happy balance. Some of the findings in the study dealt with the agricultural aspect of it, right? Well, you know, Yakima is an agrarian county. We have a large agro-business society that many of our labor is tied to. So finding ways to combat the issue without really affecting that industry as much as possible and disrupting it is, at the end of the day, a driving force. Sometimes you got to make hard decisions, though. At the end of the day, sometimes there's just a no. You know, I always have believed as a public administrator that it's our job to try as hard as we can to get to yes for the constituent. But sometimes it's just going to be a no. You can't do something because we have to abate this pollutant. Thank you, sir.
I'm watching for public comment, so I'm not seeing anyone else rising yet. Any board questions?
So you have mentioned in your presentation the time and accurate response to public inquiry. We have complaints that come into the agency on a fairly routine basis, and sometimes the public's not satisfied with the response of the agency, the timeliness for that matter. So is there something you'd like to speak to about how you would approach that problem, mm-hmm. or that challenge?
First and foremost, the biggest quotient of that is going to be whether or not we're meeting the provisions on the agency by federal and state statute. So if we're meeting the statutory requirement, then at the end of the day, we are meeting the requirement that has been given to us. Now, that's not, you shouldn't just rest on your laurels that you're meeting the bare minimum. I've always believed, I'm an American soldier. I want to be excellent. That's what I want. So if there's a way that we can increase our ability to be more timely and accurate, and there's a way that we can be more responsive to the public, by all means. But first and foremost, when you first get into an organization, reporting is always a problem. It doesn't matter what agency you're in. We have that issue where I work currently. So you need to do a good review of what policies and procedures we have to create that communication flow and assess whether or not there's a break there first. And if we're not meeting the statutory requirement, obviously there's a break. If we are meeting statutory requirement, but the response from the public is we're still not being timely enough, then it's a matter of, okay, can we feasibly increase our timeliness? But at the end of the day, there is a truth out there where we're going to get to a point to where we're as timely as we can and are going to be, and we're just not going to please everybody all the time.
If I could ask a follow-up question,
yes,
on that same topic for you, Adam. In their first round interview, you talked about turning around a division that you were charged with in your Army work, where there was a lack of communication, and you made sure that you were available on a regular basis. And you also referenced not waiting until a quarterly meeting in order to have responses to public questions. Where do you draw the line between being available 24/7 on your cell phone and being just doing a quarterly formal comment period or a formal public records request? How would you interact with the public to answer questions and provide information?
So the biggest cop-out answer to that question is it depends. But to give you a little bit of explanation, what may be emergent for the agency, I'm not going to be the expert on yet, by any means. I'm still here applying, right? But to just use some experience from my current role, right? My emergency operations center director, our fire chief, and some other folk on the training center know if it's 2 a.m, you can call me because there's a fire on the training center, and I'm pretty sure nobody down here in the Lower Valley wants that coming this way. And we need to get something going. As far as being open and available to the public, if it's a routine ask, I think it's more than fair to expect that though you're a public administrator, the normal business hours of the day are specifically what should be honored and respected. I think everybody else would want that as well. For a public constituent, there's other means and ways to get after me than just coming to the office. They have an elected representative in Ms. McKinney right there who can pepper my email inbox and shoot texts all hours of the night, and I got to be responsive. They have a president of the board right here. Same thing. So there's other ways to get after, and I think there's a certain level of expectation depending on what level of responsibility you have as a public administrator and as anybody in any organization as a leader, that you're going to be responsive to certain inquiries from certain levels. If Ms. McKinney is asking me at 8 o'clock at night a certain question about clean air, it's probably not just because some person sent a one-off email to her. It's probably because she's getting a certain volume of concern from her constituents. And so that shows that this is something that needs to be immediately addressed. Okay. I hope that answered your follow-up, sir.
I think so. Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I do have a question.
Yes.
Related to a statement that you said that you're not the expert, and I actually just want to read the Yakima Regional Clean Air Agency employs 11 staff members, and the executive director will provide oversight to these employees who are tasked with keeping the county's air quality standards within allowable limits as set by various regulatory organizations, including the federal government and the state, as you've indicated.
Yes, ma'am.
So how do you see, as an executive director, your role as not necessarily being the expert, but your job is to manage staff and keep the Regional Clean Air Authority in compliance to the regulations. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, ma'am. So I've had a few roles in my career where I was not the expert. So I was a first sergeant of a firing battery, which is a cannon battery in the field artillery. Well, I was a targeting guy. My job was to go find targets for cruise missiles and other things to blow up. I don't know anything about the breach of the weapon. I don't know the firing mechanism. My soldiers knew I didn't. But that wasn't my job. My job was to ensure personnel allocation was happening in the sense that we had enough personnel to go and man those pieces and be able to fire the guns. My job was to ensure that we had logistics coordinated. My job was to ensure we had troops. If they were injured, we would pull the casualties out. That was my function, and I was expert at that. Currently, my role is a sergeant major. I'm not the expert of doing maintenance. I'm not the expert of radar theory. I'm not the expert of ballistic theory of the field artillery. But I advise and staff with other members that are to ensure that we can meet the overall mission set of conducting artillery operations. And the role of executive director to me for this agency is not a matter of having to be a scientific expert in this field. It is a matter of being able to work with the scientific experts that we have on staff and finding what policies, procedures, and mechanisms we need to employ to be able to get after the problems that we've been given, adherence to regulatory guidance, to meet compliance for clean air, as well as administering the staff of lay people that are not necessarily scientists that are getting after that problem, and ensuring that there's policies, procedures, and rulemaking for them as well for, you know, payroll compliance. Like, I mean, a doctor of chemistry or other field is not a payroll expert either. Now, I've had many, 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 many sleepless nights about pay. I can tell you right now, I got an organization that just got back from Poland, and they haven't had their time off that they cashed out when they got home hasn't been paid out for 3 months now, and it's all the way up to the Department of the Army. And so, you know, those kinds of aspects of the job are probably more paramount for this position. We have a staff scientist who's going to be that expert, and the executive director needs to be expert in administering a staff and being able to take care of the members of the team and ensure that the different policies that you all enact go through the proper staffing process and come out with a defined product, as well as pulling information back up to you all into a decision brief or other format for briefing.
Thank you, Mr. Yost.
Yes, ma'am.
Commissioner McKinney asks a question along the lines of what I was going to ask, so I'll ask a follow-up unless someone else has another. I don't want to hog the microphone. You've given a number of examples, Adam, of working and leading in military environment,
yes,
but that's not the only place you've worked, and this obviously would not be a military environment.
Yes.
Can you talk about how you would manage staff in a civilian 9-to-5 agency where just because I said so is not always the best way of directing a team member?
I'll answer that with a preface. As an Army leader, if you're using just because you said so, you've already lost the argument. Just so you know. Getting people to do things because they want to, getting people to do things because they have a shared vision, they have a shared goal, they have an understanding of where we're going as an organization, is what any leader, regardless of Army or civilian, should actually go after. In the civilian community, you know, currently my role with the Department of the Army is as a strategic planner. And it's a good and a bad job. The good job is nobody can ever actually pin you down as to whether or not you're meeting your requirements, because everything's out of 2035 and somebody made a new decision today, so now it's at 2040. But the bad is that you're very future focused. And you're out here at the long horizon, and this is where the business of the day actually happens, right? And so getting directors, division chiefs, and other administrators on board with that long vision and that planning horizon, it's a distinct challenge, but that's where you have to, as I talked about in my presentation about a coalition. You know, I like that word. I like that word because our founders used it as how they saw our governments. They saw it as a coalition of ideas. And if you pull together a coalition and you get buy-in from other people, there's a gentleman by the last name of DeBono. He came up with this new way of thinking about problems that's called six thinking hats. And you always have this problem whenever you get into meetings that some people are going to be a little bit more quiet because they just want the meeting to be over. You got your Van Boisterous body who always just kind of shouts out ideas and just runs the meeting even though it's somebody else's meeting. Well, if you have different ways of thinking of how to do planning, you have different ways of thinking about organizations, you can enable yourself to let the staff really lead while you're more or less the guard. And that's the best circumstance for a leader. Because if I'm continuously pulling you along, then I'm obviously not doing my job of making sure you understand the intent of the organization. We have a really fancy term in the government enterprise called disciplined initiative. It just simply means that if you're a capable enough leader, your people and your organization can make distinct decisions at their level because they understand that this thing that I see that needs to be done needs to be achieved so we can get after that goal that we have over there. So, and that's how I believe that, sir.
Thank you.
Good.
I have a question. Actually, I have two questions.
Yes, sir.
The first one is, during your presentation, you mentioned having a representative attend COG meetings. Can you, and maybe I missed it, but can you tell me what the goal of that would be? What would be the expectation from that representative?
Just to be a specific touch point that's there, present. We're supposed to be the overall compliance board for the county. We are the ones in charge of compliance for clean air. So I think it's just imperative that we be accessible. So just being there, being accessible, it might be a thing to where you, sir, maybe last week had a specific topic that came up during a meeting. And then this week you have the COG meeting and I happen to be there. And you know what? We had a question on a policy, and then it spurs that conversation and it gets after us doing some of that sausage making before something goes live. So that's just really it. It's just another touch point to be accessible.
And then my second question is, if you could just briefly explain, you mentioned a lot about transparency,
yes,
a lot about communication. And so if you could kind of tell me how that communication looks like with Lower Valley agencies and Lower Valley cities, and then how you bring that information back to the board so we make the most informed decision at a countywide level, right? Because everybody should be included. So how does that look like? How does that communication with agencies, cities, and stakeholders in the Lower Valley look like?
Yes, sir. So to be completely honest with you, it's something that I've got to see. At the end of the day, I have to know how we're currently doing it before I can really go forward. The easiest answer as far as the first steps would just be public introduction or in-person introduction and in-person communication until we can figure out. Because every government, every city, every region of Yakima County is different. I grew up here, okay? There's always been kind of like this northern and southern valley disconnect, right? Just has always been a thing. And then there, I remember back in the 1990s, I can't remember the year, please don't ask me, but there used to be a county sheriff substation on 48th and Knob Hill. And then the city annexed out to 48th. There was a lot of hate and discontent for a while, and as long as that substation remained inside the city limits, because now Yakima had two sheriff's offices inside of the city. So, and then they kicked it out to Meadowbrook and so on and so forth. So I understand that there's that friction, and there's at the end of the day, any person that's in any leadership position, any person that's in any executive director position, you gotta take it on yourself to ensure that communication lines are created. And what that looks like is going to be, it's not gonna be a one size fits all project. It could be that we communicate with the Lower Valley in way X and the Upper Valley in way Y. I don't honestly know yet, but first and foremost, the first steps are always in-person communication, and then doing a sensing session of figuring out how those people want to be communicated with. One of my favorite lines from a previous previous supervisor: there's no such thing as an emergent email. So I just, that stuck with me for 15 years of my career. That if it's an emergency, pick up the phone, drive your car at me. Don't send an email. I might get to that in about 3 hours. If you show up at my doorstep, we're having a conversation. So. And then on top of that, just being, you go back to the conference of government, that touch point, right? Just being present. Presence and leadership says volumes about how much you care, as well as pays all kinds of dividends, maybe having a requirement on the executive director where they will be present for certain Lower Valley meetings, whether it be city council meetings, whatever. Getting after that problem set just to make sure that those equities from the Lower Valley are being heard.
So to dovetail what Jose was asking,
yes,
we think the quarterly public forum has been highly underutilized. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you could do as a director is to bring in the public, bring in business for those forums to actually talk about a subject. And how would you approach both business and the citizenry to communicate, have those people discuss a particular topic?
Yeah, so one of the things that we did when I worked at Mount Adams is we would have monthly meetings with our growers, right? And so we would source the growers. What, you know, cherry growers are, concerned about Western axillary cherry disease, apple growers were worried about bitter pit for their Honeycrisp, whatever the issue is, right? So we would ask our growers, what are you concerned about? And then we would do what we could to find experts in that field to bring them in and just have a conversation about it. Give a presentation and then have a conversation like we are right now in open forum. It's a little bit more difficult as a, I work for the training center right now. We're going through this wonderful compliance issue up there. And we're currently sourcing the public for involvement, what we call a RAD board, right? It's a restoration advisory board where members of the public and members of government agencies are going to come together and discuss how are we going to get after this monster problem that we have up there, right? PFAS, right? A nasty word. It's a difficult thing. It really is. Business tends to be a little bit more involved than public because they have a very vested interest in the fact that it's going to cost them immediate dollars. But at the end of the day, I think if you do a very deliberate effort, I think if you pound the pavement, you can't just give up, is I guess what I'm getting after. We got to try. We got to try hard. And if we retool that quarterly board, as you said, sir, to be more of an educational forum, perhaps there might be more bites at the apple. I don't know. But it's going to be a struggle. It's going to be a struggle bus for a while, I think. It's worth it, though.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
We're coming up against our time limit with a couple more minutes, so I want to give members of the public another chance to ask questions if they would like to. You're not limited to one. If you've already asked a question, you can ask another one, but I don't want the time to run out before members of the public who've attended have had a chance to ask any additional questions they may have. Not seeing anyone moving towards the microphone. Any other board questions? Well, thank you, Adam. We really appreciate you coming back for this second round interview, and it was great to hear your presentation and ask you these follow-up questions. You heard Jackie summarize the process. So we will be, oh, I'm sorry, there is a question.
Sir.
Will he be coming back here, or is he leaving now for good?
He will be stepping out so that our next candidate can come in about 5 minutes.
But then he will not be coming back?
I don't think that we have you scheduled to come back, though it's a public meeting, and as a member of the Yakima County community, you're entirely welcome to take a seat. We're not going to throw anyone out. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate you all. Thank you.
So we will the meeting is not adjourned, but we're in a 5-minute recess waiting for our next candidate to arrive and get set up. Our next candidate is here. Jackie, would you please introduce him?
All right, everyone. I'd like to introduce you to Mark Thornsberry, and he is our second applicant for the position of Executive Director for the Yakima Regional Clean Air Agency. Mark, if you would take your spot right up there. We have your presentation, and just give me an indication when you're ready for the next slides, and I'll be your driver.
Oh, okay. I will have several of those, but I may just have you bleed through some of them. Do you want me to stand here,
yep,
or is this just
thank you.
Is this the place where you want me?
And Mark, you're presenting to the board of the Yakima Regional Clean Air Agency, as well as to the public.
Okay. Yes, thank you. I did receive that information in the notice, so I will do that. If I can get my timer to work here, but not everything else. If I can.
We're just happy you're here safely.
Yes.
So don't be
in
any way.
Relax with the time.
I think I've got what I need here.
Okay, so thank you for the opportunity to talk today a little bit about how I would engage YRCAA's constituents. My apologies for my tardiness, but I'm afraid I just really couldn't do anything about that. I'm going to be responding to three questions that you probably already know that the board has provided. And so I'm going to be working essentially on that today as I have a conversation with you about it. So Jack Ma, who if you don't know is a famous internet entrepreneur, once said that opportunities can be found where the complaints are. And I, in talking about complaints and inquiries, I tend to agree with that position. I certainly have in my prior time in public service. For me, when I'm looking at complaints and inquiries, I see them as an opportunity to understand a situation from a different perspective. Sometimes it gives me a chance to address misunderstandings. Other times it lets me curb rumors. And so for me, there are those who find them sort of annoying. I find them to be a window into the community to understand the issues as they see them, and sometimes for some perspective that I might not have picked up on my own that other people can share with me. So with that in mind, let's sort of dive into the details. For those of you sitting here who are thinking to yourself, gee, complaints, the guy says, listen, wow, that's profound. Maybe I should really talk a little bit about what that doesn't mean. So I think it's probably human nature that when people tend to hear a complaint, they start to tune out. You start to, in your mind, create a response to the person instead of listening to what they have to say. And so I try to actively listen to what the person is talking about and to understand what they're talking about rather than resorting to being defensive and responding that way. I won't always say that it comes easily, but I've done spent you know, the last 10 years doing that, and I think it's really important. I also try to identify key factors in related to either the inquiry or the complaint. I always try to steer the conversation to actionable items. It's you know pretty common that those kinds of conversations can be sort of broad-ranging when you're engaging with somebody. But I always try to sort of steer those to things that allow me to actually make changes or affect the outcome. So I try to focus on that. If anything can be done, it'll be there. My grandfather used to say to me years ago, don't just do something, sit there. And I never really understood that probably very well when I was a kid, but I sort of do get it now a little bit better. There's nothing wrong with saying I don't know. And it's almost always annoying when you get someone who's more interested in giving you an answer and moving you along than it is to actually have somebody who thinks about what you have to say. So, you know, I think all of us have probably experienced this. You call up customer support somewhere and what they mostly want to do is get you off the phone and put the check mark in and move you along. So I have no problems with saying I don't know. And I always try to, if I don't know something firsthand, to investigate what's going on so I can speak from an educated point of view. If I don't have some context that I need, I'll take time to research. And then I'll respond with something that's appropriate to the question, even if that means it's a few days later. I don't think there's any shame in that. So the next item, a lot of complaints and inquiries come from, let's see, the one up above that, come from misunderstandings or a lack of information. It's not the fault of the person who's talking, it's just there are lots of things involved, and particularly in complex issues, that people just simply don't know about. And so I always try to take the time to explain sort of the bigger picture to help people understand and engage with what's happening and how those affect both policymaking and decision making. I won't say it solves every problem, it doesn't, but it works pretty well for, or at least has for me. Ensure quality and parity. So, it, you know, again, human nature, we tend to give more credence and credibility to people we know, you know, friends, acquaintances, peers, etc. But I always try to look at complaints and inquiries sort of on their own merits individually. And so I steer clear of allowing personal, you know, feelings or preferences or knowledge or past relationships affect sort of how I approach those. statutory. So, you know, obviously there are some, you know, legal requirements to following statutory regulations, but a lot of people see them sort of as an impediment and try to skirt them. I don't, and maybe this is just a matter of semantics, but for me, I think they're there to sort of help everyone. They are part of the process. Open public meetings and public records and hearings and the rest are all ways to engage the public. I think that serves everyone, including the agency, well. So for me, it's just sort of a perspective thing. And then embrace it. So this doesn't really, talking about transparency, doesn't really address how I interact with complaints and inquiries, but it falls maybe more under the idea of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. If you are able to provide information that is timely and before it's requested, you can eliminate a lot of the sort of the things that come out of complaints and issues, particularly with the public. I took a look, and I'm just going to read a few of these off that I noticed. There's nothing wrong with the agency's website, but I would describe it sort of as incomplete. So one of the things I would certainly do if I was looking at it, minutes, permit applications, annual financial statements, which weren't there, lists of subject facilities, inspection reports, sort of all those public records things, I think would be appropriate there. The web is a fantastic way to disseminate information. You can get it anywhere you want. You can get it on your phone here. You can go home. You can read about it in your den at 1 o'clock in the morning in your underwear if you want. But I think that's an important thing for addressing complaints and inquiries is that transparency piece that's sort of more proactive. I've done that in the past. I'll add to that one little note too that I think the agency needs to be objective and it needs to be seen as objective with respect to the information it delivers, so that it both has a basis for its own conclusions and allows other people to understand them. Moving on, so other government agencies. So working with your peers, and I've done this for some time, is a lot like any other relationship. It requires a certain amount of respect for other people and a willingness to be flexible because they have their own issues to address. Simon Sinek once said, cooperation doesn't mean agreement. It means working together to advance the greater good. So with that in mind, I try to respect the autonomy of my partners and peers, whether that's agencies or non-governmental entities. The wording of the question was how to ensure their decisions coordinate well. And I'm kind of uncomfortable with the ensure part because I'm never really sure that you can do that effectively with another entity, particularly one that's autonomous. And attempts that I've seen to do that usually end up backfiring and damage the relationship sometimes for a period of years. So I'm kind of worried. I would prefer, if we're using an E word, I would rather we used encourage rather than ensure. But I always try to accept that peers have their own missions, objectives, and constraints. And so I try to avoid sort of applying pressure. And instead, when it comes to policy discussions, engage in persuasion with those entities. Let's see, common goals. So I always look for shared objectives. These are places where we can both achieve a similar goal through a similar process. They aren't always obvious, and sometimes they pop up or crop up unexpectedly. But I always try to have conversations about where those places might be in advance, so when those opportunities present themselves, you can sort of pick up fairly quickly with it. Try to connect with governing boards and key individuals. I think, again, sort of supporting that common goals piece, you need to have good communication. You need to be available and accessible to other people so that when there are issues that come up, there's a recognition, you know, hey, I can give so-and-so a call. I know, you know, so-and-so, they've been talking about this thing that might dovetail with this. Those kinds of sort of broad discussions, I think, are useful in moving the ball forward, particularly when you're in a dynamic environment. So that's something I do. So I would hope, certainly, that other entities that I'm working with are basing their decision-making on data and science just like we are. So if I'm asking them to work with us on policy matters or to make changes in their own policy, always feel like I need to provide supporting information for that. If I'm going to expect data to support where we are, then I need to be able to provide that to someone else so that they can inform themselves when they're having conversations about it and inform their own constituencies when there are questions about why did you do this, where did you go. I think that's important from a sort of a relationship standpoint. Yeah, okay, so being able to adjust your sort of expectations and have some flexibility is important. Not everybody's going to see the world as you do. And so as a result of that, you need to sort of be a little bit flexible, be willing to consider reasonable alternatives. I always tend to prefer 50% of something over 100% of nothing. That's just a personal thing. So I always try to be respectful of the partners that I'm working with. Well, we looked over the last one there, which was, so exercise reciprocity, which is sort of a fancy way of just saying be the kind of partner that you'd want in someone else. Call it the golden rule, whatever you want. But I think it's important that when you're looking at things that you look at it from the other guy's perspective, you recognize their issues, and you try to treat them with the same level of care and respect and support that you would want from them. Okay, now we're on to next thing. So what does that end up looking like? And I know we're running behind on time, so I'm going to sort of clip through these fairly quickly. But in talking about sort of other entities, I want to just quickly talk a little bit about sort of what does that potentially look like. In other words, it's great to talk about the big picture stuff. Okay, that's all wonderful. But what does that really look like when you put it in practice? So from my, and it's relatively limited knowledge of the agency, but from what I can tell, here are some of the partners I think that we would want to work with. Some of these we may already be working with, so this is no aspersion on anyone else. Certainly fire departments and districts. Clearly we both are doing burning a little bit different. We're concerned about burning with respect to air quality. Fire departments are concerned about fire safety. But there's still, I think, opportunities for a burn education, partnering with them for that. Certainly for illegal burns and some enforcement, maybe collaboration there. Washington Department of Natural Resources, USFS. So, obviously, and I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, wildfires are far and away the greatest impact on air quality, at least certainly on an acute basis, not necessarily a chronic basis, but certainly acute, in the area. And those are things we don't have control over. Frankly, no one does. They're mostly acts of God, occasionally acts of stupidity. But once they get going, there's really nothing you can do about it. So I think there's an opportunity to really work with them and support stuff like, I've got to see if I've got the name written down, the Forest Health Strategy they've got. So working to manage fuel loads and those kinds of things to reduce the number of wildfires and their extent, which would have a huge impact, oversized impact on some of the issues that we're facing in terms of air quality. City and county planning departments. So I think there are some opportunities there with respect to zoning buffers and a few other things that might be able to help mitigate some issues. I'd want to dive into that a little bit more to know for certain, but I think it's something I would want to look into. Department of Health, County Health Department. Certainly, I think if we're looking at data in terms of impacts on health from air quality and looking at tracking those and seeing if there's some causal effects, et cetera, I think these would be two great partners to work with in terms of trying to identify that. Next one. Yakima Valley Council of Governments, WSDOT. So transportation and transit, obviously vehicles are combustion engines most of the time, unless you're driving an electric vehicle. We have a freeway that runs right through the heart of everything, and there's a lot of truck traffic headed from west to east, so I think there are opportunities to work on transit and transportation. Ecology and EPA, I won't even spend time on those because they're kind of obvious. EPA obviously, manages areas that are adjacent to us, so we need to work with them in ecology as a host of resources available to us. Public electric utilities, potential maybe education with respect to converting from combustion to electric, perhaps electric charging stations, et cetera. Again, I'd want to look a little bit more into that to know for certain. All right. So I think probably everybody has heard the term ignorance of the law is no excuse. That comes from a legal idea that there are certain acts that are just inherently wrong. Think in your mind, murder, theft, you don't probably need to read the statutes to figure out you shouldn't be doing that. But the problem is that when it comes to air quality regulations, a lot of the acts that we think of as things that you shouldn't be doing aren't necessarily obviously wrong. They're wrong not because they're sort of inherently that way, it's because we've chosen to make them wrong because they have a negative impact in some area. And so I think that's the sort of the fundamental reason why education is such a key aspect of getting compliance, is because you can't sort of rely on that natural inherent knowledge. So with that in mind, going again back to planning and building departments, so when you're talking about education, I think it's probably fair to say that anybody who's looking at doing development, who's looking at business stuff, planning and building departments are kind of the first thing that pops into your mind. It's usually the first place that you go. So I see opportunities to partner with them so that we potentially can get involved early in the process. We get an introduction to people, and we can sort of collaborate on making sure that that's a smooth process and everybody's working sort of towards the same objective. I think the earlier you do that, the better off you are, at least that's been my experience. Adequate field interaction. I don't know enough about the agency at present to be able to say one way or the other, but I am a little concerned about whether or not there's adequate field interaction. I think that's establishing sort of those relationships is a good way to allow for what I would say more casual education, apart maybe from enforcement or inspection. And I took a little look just to sort of see. Washington Clean Air Agency, excluding Puget Sound, which is just its whole other animal, allocate on average about 66% of their workforce to field operations, and the other 34% to administration. But the Yakima Clean Air Agency has that the other way around, allocates 40% to ops and about 60% to administration. So I'm not quite sure what the story is on that, but it's certainly something that if I were in the position, I'd want to take a look at and see whether or not that needs to be adjusted. We talked a little bit about website already, but I was talking about that in terms of the context of general agency operations. In this particular case, I think there's a really strong basis right now in terms of educational resources. I'm not sure that they're as obvious as I would like to see, so that would be something I'd be looking at. Some of them look like they're a little dog-eared, old, maybe need like a little refresh and update with some stuff. So I definitely want to look at sort of punching those up and also potentially maybe tie them more directly to industries that are likely to be subject to regulation. So it's easier for people coming to the website to immediately sort of find the stuff that they ought to know. Again, other opportunities to sort of get the message out, whether that's sort of more newsy about what we're doing and or about issues that we're facing, or whether it's more educational, but any of the civic and industry, there's a number of entities around here. There's probably Alliance, there's probably Rotary, Chambers of Commerce, there are some business associations around, the downtown associations. I think all of those are opportunities to address the public or their members, and again, sort of put out whatever message that it may be that we feel we need to do with, again, whether that's more educational or something else. Events, again, this is another one. So there's Central Washington State Fair, let me see, I wrote a couple of these down. There's some farmers markets, Nile Valley Community Days. Again, opportunities maybe for either some form of literature or displays, educational materials, maybe a man booth. It's just, I don't think, you know, as I get toward the bottom of this slide, none of these things are going to really radically change the picture, but they all feed into what hopefully would be a coherent sort of strategy for outreach and what that looks like. Local media, you've got half dozen television stations, another dozen plus radio stations. I think you still have a newspaper still around. Although those are starting to go by the wayside. All of those, I think, are opportunities to, again, find other ways to get the message out. I think there are also ways to drive traffic to the website in tandem with some sort of revamping of that. So I think all of that is potentially good. And then material for youth in schools. This isn't the today sort of thing. This is a looking down the road, but the National Association of Clean Air Agencies and a lot of sister agencies have done quite a bit of work on this that I think could be borrowed. Some of it we could develop ourselves, but to really talk to and reach out to the next generation about the importance of clean air and the role that we play in it. So that kind of wraps up most of what I had to say. I just want to say in conclusion that there's always some tension when it comes to regulatory agencies. I think these two probably fairly famous and well-known quotes illustrate that fairly well. You sort of need a thoughtful balance and a steady hand when you're dealing with sometimes two opposing points of view that it's difficult to reconcile. And so as a result, I think maybe the most important question today isn't the ones that I've answered, but really the one that only the board can answer, which is what kind of agency do you want in the future? And your choice of leadership is going to have a big impact on sort of what that is. And about the only thing I can tell you is that as a public administrator for over a decade, I think agencies should be science, fact, and data driven, committed to being effective, efficient, and responsive, and above all, should be an honest broker regardless of the audience, the subject, or the circumstance. And I think your residents and your businesses deserve nothing less. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mark. I know there will be a number of questions from the board and members of the public. Again, a reminder, if a member of the public wants to ask a question, please move towards the microphone so that we can see that you want to. I'll kick things off, though, while people think about questions they may want to ask. Mark, you asked a lot, you suggested rather, a lot of additional outward-facing public engagement activities, developing materials, attending events. We have limited staff, and the taxpayers have to fund the agency's activities. How would you build the capacity to generate those materials and do that outreach?
Well, I think there are a couple things. Number one is you can create more in-house inexpensively than most people think. And I saw this a lot in my prior position. There was a lot of discussion about strategic plans, and a lot of people spent a lot of time hiring consultants and, you know, third parties to provide all this, you know, material. And I can remember doing a presentation one time to a number of small entities specifically on the topic, because a lot of them were asking the same question you had, which, how am I going to afford this? I mean, these guys come in and it's great, but these engineers charge me, you know, $150, $200 an hour, and what comes out is really slick, but how can I sort of manage that? And so what I told them and what I'll tell you is a lot of that work is information that really you already know. And I'll use an analogy. It's sort of like taking, and forgive me for anybody who does this, and you're certainly welcome to, I'm not casting aspersions on it, but when you take your taxes to a tax accountant, my feeling always is by the time I've explained everything, I've already kind of done them. It's just now a matter of plugging them in the right place, because the other person doesn't know that. So I think a lot of the knowledge and internal capacity that you have can be put to use with that. The other thing is that you look for what other people have done. And again, when I was talking about the issue with education and outreach to schools, there have been just amazing across the U.S. Work to develop materials, et cetera, that other places are happy to share with that. So I think between the two of those, you can go a long way. Then the question just becomes, do I want to spend that, you know, 80% to get that last 20%? I will tell you that I tend to be fiscally conservative, so I would probably urge you not to. But you certainly can do that, but then that's your choice. You're not driven to it because you feel you have to. It then becomes something that's voluntary if you really want to, you know, sort of polish it up. But a lot of times it's the core information. It's not so much the flash. So I think you can get a long way without having to expend a lot of resources to get it.
And
then just a clarifying question. Do you see part of your role as the potential executive director to be that outward-facing voice, you know, speaking to Rotary clubs and so on, or would you be looking to staff or board members to do some of that?
Well, I think as the head of the agency, certainly I think that falls to me. Now, delegating some of that is, I think, appropriate in certain cases. In particular, if you're talking to, let's say, an industry association about something that's fairly technical, then it may be appropriate to have somebody who comes with that skill set to the table to talk about that. If you're talking about more generically for to the general public, then that's something that probably falls more to me. And certainly the board is always free. I can't tell you what to do. So the board's always free to engage whenever it wants. There may be times when I would kindly suggest that might not be the best option, but you know, I know who runs the show, so.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask the same question. I think it's relevant based off your response. So the executive director, and I'll just read this as I did before, the Yakima Regional Clean Air Agency employs approximately 11 staff members. The executive director will provide oversight to these employees who are tasked in keeping the county's air quality standards within allowable limits set by the various regulatory organizations, both federal and state. So how do you see your role as executive director in something that is very technical, but there's also staff? And so how do you see your role as executive director in an agency that is very technical, but related to your role? How is your role in this agency?
Well, I would say I probably tend to see it sort of as a corollary, but on a lower level from how the board interacts with me. The board is intended as essentially an oversight and policy-making body that makes sure that I'm doing the job that I'm hired for, that I'm effective at doing that, and that I'm following the rules as the board has set them out. The corollary sort of that, I think, at the executive level is doing similar things but within the organization. So I want to know what's going on, what's happening, how is this being handled, and providing some guidelines about how I want to see that occur that I think then in turn meet the expectations of the board. So, you know, I'm not necessarily always going to be, you know, boots on the ground. Now, I'll say that I think I'm a relatively intelligent person, so I think I engage in relatively intelligent conversations about these. I am not an air quality expert, so I'm not going to get too far down into the weeds. But I'm going to want to understand and be able to make sense of that at the, say, 15 to 20,000 foot layer. And if I feel like there's something that's not right, then I'm going to drill down on that. And I'm going to want some more information, some explanation. Tell me, how did you get to this conclusion? Why did you do this? And then try to determine whether or not I think that is reasonable. I need to be able to answer whether or not I feel that, because if you come back to me and ask me, is that reasonable, I'm going to need to be able to have that answer. And so that's sort of where I see my role in that case. It's the sort of interface between the outward piece and the niggling details of how do you address the issues and bringing those together. I've spent most of my life doing that in one form or another, so it doesn't bother me. I'm pretty comfortable with it. But that's sort of where I see my role in this. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
We have a quarterly community forum that I personally believe has been underutilized. Is that a forum where you think you could bring the community and business together, maybe for educational purposes?
I didn't have time to talk about it, but it was on my list if I had it. So I would say the answer is I don't know enough about it. There's no minutes for it. I can't tell anything about what's happened with it. So I am operating from almost complete ignorance. But I will tell you that my sixth sense is that it's probably underutilized or maybe unnecessary. A couple of things drive me to that. The first of which is that it's held during the middle of the day. So I'm not sure who its target audience is, but most people work during the day. So unless it's really exclusively a business thing, I don't think you probably have an opportunity to reach very many people with it. So that seems to me to be an early evening kind of thing. People leave work and then come to this. I think there is a potential opportunity maybe to transition that. I think its significance might be less if there was more information readily available, which goes back to what I was saying about the transparency. This seems to me to be a sort of a substitute for that, and I think it's a poor one, and that's just my own opinion. So I would like to see that particular aspect addressed elsewhere, and then take a look at, so what does that leave for that forum? Does that end up being maybe a, if it's a quarterly thing, then does that end up being you know, more of an educational thing twice a year, say, you know, spring and fall for general public, residents, that kind of thing, and then maybe summer, winter for industry, and then your, you know, your content is targeted to those. Timing, by the way, so you'd hold one of those in the evening, business you'd probably hold during the day. But I do think it needs review. So I would agree with that. Exactly what the outcome of that review would be, I am too ignorant to say. Thank you.
I have a question on, in terms of creating or improving in communication with Lower Valley agencies, cities, and stakeholders, together the most or the best information to bring to the board so that we can make the most informed decision. How do you do that? How would you do that? How would you build that communication?
Well, the first thing that I'm going to do, I've done this every place that I've gone, is the first thing I do when I come in is I spend a fair amount of time just simply going around and meeting people and talking to them. Let them know who I am, what is it I'm wanting to do, and then engaging with them as part of that conversation. What are things that you see that you think need to be done that aren't? People are more willing to engage if they think they have somebody who is actually going to do something about it. The only way you can build that kind of trust is by actually doing it. There's no shortcuts. So for anybody who tries to tell you there isn't. What you have to do is you have to back up your language with action. And so I first try to get an understanding of where everybody's coming from. And then I look at opportunities where we can do something potentially about that. Go back and engage with them. And once you come back and you respond and people say, okay, this guy isn't just going to show up on my doorstep, listen to my stuff, and then go back and, you know, blow me off and just ignore what I had to say, then they're a lot more willing to engage in that sort of ongoing dialogue. And again, this goes back to what I was saying about unexpected opportunities. When something comes up and somebody goes, hey, I'm going to call Mark over at YRCAA because I think this might affect them. Or maybe there's an opportunity for some coordination here, or is there something they could do to help support us in a way that advances their objectives and mine too? But you kind of have to lay some foundation for that, and I think that's reaching out. You are the small city representative, so are you mayor of?
I'm mayor of this city.
Oh, right here, okay, great. So that's what I would, you know, that's what I'd be doing. Could be, you know, having a lunch meeting or something just to sit down and talk, not really an agenda particularly, but to just have a conversation to understand what issues are on their mind. And that then allows me to sort of, you know, just let it percolate in the back of my head, okay, where might we be going? As I'm looking at other things, that then keeps sort of clocking around in the back of my head and go, oh, hey, okay, that might be something we could do, and make myself a note about that. Next time we get together for something, I'll mention, what if we did something like this? And I think that's how you build those relationships. Once the relationship is in, communication is less of an issue. It sort of takes care of itself.
Thank you.
Any public questions? Please do approach the microphone. Yes, thank you.
Dean Epfer from West Valley. Some of us in the audience didn't have the opportunity to see your CV or anything. Could you just, you briefly mentioned some of your professional background, but you didn't mention educational background. Could you tell us some about that?
Sure. I can give you sort of the Cliff's Notes version of the whole thing, if that would be helpful to you. So my education, I've got a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration. So that's sort of where my background is. I don't come, you know, from the sciences. So I'm an administrator, and I've spent the last 13 years in public administration, so I think that's what I bring to the table in this particular context. I have had an unusual career. I started out in technology consulting, actually launched my own business and ran it for about 8 years. And then I went into freight forwarding and customs house brokerage, and I was in that for about 10 years. And then I was in public administration for about 13 years. So as I say, there is absolutely no career counselor, I think, on earth, unless they are stoned or drunk, that would ever recommend that career path. But it has worked for me, and it's been, I've found it very satisfactory. I've enjoyed my work. So I've gone where I thought I could have a positive impact, as opposed to trying to follow some predetermined trajectory. Opportunities do not always come on a schedule.
Any other follow-up questions?
None for me, sir, Chair.
No. Any closing remarks?
I think I've probably said all I had to say, and I probably run too long already anyway.
Well, I hope it was worth the drive. It was for us. We really enjoyed hearing from you. I very much appreciate you coming over here to present to us and members of our community on your view and vision of the Yakima Regional Clean Air Agency.
You're welcome.
May you have smoother sailing on the way.
Well, I won't be under a deadline, so that makes it all the much easier.
Thank you. We'll take a brief pause while Jackie shows our guest. We'll just then move into... Thank you. So we've had a chance to hear from our two candidates that emerged out of the first round of interviews, and the public now has had a chance to as well. Now is a chance for the members of the public who wish to give us, the board, feedback on what they think of these candidates, any issues that they've addressed, any preferences they have, before we discuss as a board next steps in our process. As a reminder, the position was listed as open until filled, and so we are still accepting resumes. We're not done until we've made a final job offer that has been accepted. So the position is still actively being recruited for. Any comments from the public at this time on either or both of the candidates? If you have those, please do come to the microphone and share your views.
Seem to be the only one who likes the microphone.
We appreciate that.
I actually have a question. I had noticed that the two candidates had more of a business sort of background, and none of them really had any science background. I'm going to guess, with the number of applicants you had, that you probably had some people with science backgrounds. Just a guess.
Actually, that's more of an incorrect guess. Most of the applicants we had were from a public employee background, not in the sciences, general government experience. These two candidates had the strongest public administration background, and that's why they moved to the top of the applicant pool, but it was not a preference for a pure public administrator to the exclusion of any kind of science or technical skills. I think if we could have found someone with both, which was what our criteria questions look for, a public administrator who knows science, that would have been our obvious.
Well, I'm actually glad to hear that you didn't exclude people with science.
Just for the education of the public and the board, I've had conversations with staff at the Department of Ecology who work in the clean air division as well, saying, are you having this problem as well? And they said, yes, there's a definite shortage of people with this kind of scientific background willing to work in the public sector right now. And that's probably why they keep stealing hours.
Okay. And just a last comment, that I had prepared something to say for the 3 minutes that it was given. And it's probably inappropriate to speak it now, because I actually thought the candidates were going to be here. I wanted to speak to them. Okay. But I guess I'd like to leave a copy of what I had to say to the board members, if that's possible.
Yeah, certainly.
Okay. Now, unfortunately, I only have 2 copies left.
If you give it to Pam, our clerk, she will circulate it to every member of the board, including Mayor Deason.
And I'm quite sure that you're all not going to agree with my assessment, but I feel like I need to say it.
I think our candidates have both articulated the board's position, which is we don't have to agree with everything in order to listen to it. So.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I did give the reason I only don't have enough copies is I did give a copy to each of the candidates as they left.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Any other public comments? No.
Well, thank you. Then we'll move into a discussion about next steps. We've heard from two candidates who've gone through two rounds of interviews. Any impressions from board members on the candidates at this time?
Two great candidates. I mean, I didn't find fault for either one.
And they didn't use it.
Yeah, I already think if we were to conclude and make a decision, I think it would be very difficult for that. They're both excellent and have their own very positive highlights. Having said that, I do know that there was a last minute application that did come in, and so I my preference would be that we would still maintain the process.
So,
I was just going to say that I thought they were both strong candidates. Mark answered the questions very well. He was easy to follow, and I was impressed with him. But I agree with the commissioner, we should continue with it. I also, just as a comment, I don't know how we go about doing this, but I know a member from the public mentioned having the agriculture community having some input into the candidates as well, and I would like to see that happen somehow. I don't know how it happens, but would be helpful.
Well, I think the general option, and to the credit of those who are here today representing the public, the announcement was made for anyone in the public to come, which would include anyone in any kind of industry. I'm supportive. I just wish that there would have been more interest, but I want to make sure that we don't appear to be trying to give more advanced notice for input on one industry over another over the public. I do believe that it is important. I only wish that everyone from every part had taken the time. So to the three of you, thank you very much.
Yes. In my opinion, it wasn't advertised very well. I wouldn't have known about it had it not been somebody that told me.
Well, to that point and to yours, since we are, I think we have consensus that we're going to continue with this process, might I suggest that we advertise again that we have these candidates and that there's an opportunity for the public to review and provide comment.
Okay. Just to be clear here, what I'm understanding, we had that late candidate that we think the county human resources staff have agreed is very well qualified, that we want to move ahead with interviewing that candidate and perhaps at the time scheduling in the very near future, and perhaps at the same time as scheduling the public forum with that candidate, we invite the others back to answer questions as well from perhaps Upper Valley residents and other members of the public who may want to attend, then providing an opportunity for final input on what may be those same candidates or perhaps three before we hope be ready to make a decision.
I think that's a fine suggestion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Then that would be a question of, I'm sorry, Jackie, did you wish?
I just wanted to point out as long as we can also include an online ability for another public, because we do have an out-of-state applicant. So if we have another public forum, I would just like that to be available, that particular candidate may not be able to make it back here, so that we create an online forum, if need be.
After Mr. Thornsberry's experience today, I would be risking his health to send it back through the gorge again so soon, perhaps. Is that an online option for
absolutely,
especially the candidates who'd already attended one public forum to participate in?
Absolutely.
Yes.
All right, very good. Schedule then, I think we'd be, if I understood Jackie from conversations with that candidate, we'd be looking at the first week in
August.
First week in August. What is the availability of board members in the first week in August?
Thursday afternoon for me was
fourth.
Actually, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, right now.
Unfortunately, Mr. Chair, I am on vacation with my family that week.
That
however,
doesn't count.
However, as Jackie knows, I always work. And so if we're able to make the online option option work, then I will, depending upon Wi-Fi availability, be available.
Okay.
I should say, other than that, Friday.
Okay, so not
that's
Friday.
We
had discussed Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday for you.
That's for me.
For you. Dr. Jones, I can do that. Okay.
And that would work for me, Tuesday.
Any of those would? Okay. Why don't we, I think Tuesday is probably best for me, but I could make Wednesday or Thursday is more difficult.
Tuesday would be definitely better for
Tuesday's
me.
Tuesday's definitely better.
Okay.
Tuesday would work. Okay. Jackie, Maylene, does Tuesday, the August 2nd, work for you?
Yes, that will work.
Okay. Same time frame, 2 to 4-ish?
2 to 4?
Yes, because I think, I'm assuming, Jackie, that the first interview would be...
It needs to be before.
Yes, and so we would interview with the more detailed questions and then decide to, do we send this candidate to the public forum in the afternoon? We're not presuming that this candidate is going to meet all those criteria, but we suspect that likely this candidate would.
So if we feel he doesn't qualify, then is there a reason for the afternoon meeting?
I think the reason for the afternoon meeting would then be we have two candidates we feel good about. We would allow additional public comment on them and then be prepared to take board action to move forward with authorizing negotiations for a job offer with that candidate.
Okay. And for that August meeting, would that still be available?
I think we would do that in the agency offices.
I think the Yakima Regional Clean Air office would be appropriate. And Zoom.
And Zoom.
Yeah.
So 2 p.m. would be the this meeting I'm not sure if the proper terminology is executive or closed session, but for purposes of interviewing that candidate, going to then the opens public forum portion around 3 o'clock. Okay. I think that's a consensus. Does anyone feel they require a motion on that?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Pam, did you get all of that down in minutes? Okay, thank you. We've been talking so fast, so I want to make sure that that is clear. And it is, of course, being recorded. Since this is primarily a public forum and is a little less formal than a business meeting, were there any public questions on the board's intended moving forward in the way we've described? I'm seeing shaking of heads no, but okay, just for the purposes of an audio recording. So I think it's clear. Is there any other business at this time? On this, we can't do too much else because it's a single purpose special meeting. But if there's no other questions or comments, I will adjourn this session and thank you all for being here. And especially thank you, Mayor Trevino, for hosting. And I'm sure some of those cookies will find their way out the door.
I'm going to get another one.
Thank you very much. We are.